Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Spark Radio Show, filled with strategies, possibilities, actions, resources, and knowledge that may be the spark of a better solution to ignite a positive change in your life. The number to call if you have questions for Melanie or any of our guests is area code 347-215-8390. Now, here's your host, Ms. Melanie.
Well, hello and welcome to, or welcome back to, Spark Radio. I am your host, Ms. Melanie, on this beautiful fall evening. I want to thank you for investing your time to be with us, to listen, to learn, to share some ideas. And sometimes happens in life, the best laid plans and schedules don't always work the way we hope. And so I am away from my computer this evening, so I want to thank Tom for patching everything together. And he will be back, I think, later in our show. So if you have questions, we'll ask you to hold those until after we've had a chance to talk with our guest tonight. And before I introduce her, I do want to ask you to think about something that you've learned on a past segment of Spark. Have you taken an action on something that you've learned that's made a positive difference in your life? And if so, please let us know. We do appreciate that. And rate the shows. That helps us as well. I also want to take a moment and thank Rain Bonanza LLC, who helps to bring Blog Talk Radio to you. And you can check out the services available to support you on your journey at www.brainbonanza.com. And so tonight we have an exciting opportunity to interview a wonderful young woman who is the public programs assistant at the Smithsonian in Washington, D.C. And we're going to talk with Ms. Katie Crooks tonight about her journey, how she got there, following her passions, and some adventures that she experienced along the way, some passions that she has now, and hopefully you'll hear something in her story that will resonate with you as well. And so I'll say welcome, Katie.
Hi, Melanie.
How are you?
I'm doing very well. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being with me. So to start out, I will tell you that we do have listeners from around the world, just to give you some context, and an age range from 15 through 60 plus. So the audience is all over the board, just to keep that in mind. And so let's start off, Katie, just tell us a little bit about you. What would you like listeners to know about you?
I suppose I could start from the beginning. I grew up in Iowa. In a very small town, it was a farming community. My parents farmed for the majority of my childhood, and we moved from the country to the small farming community when I was in high school, I believe. Life was pretty simple. We didn't have a lot of luxuries or anything like that, but I always enjoyed learning, and my parents were really big on my education as far as making sure that if I wanted to do something a little bit different or a little bit out of the way, they tried to accommodate it as best they could. School usually came pretty easy for me when I was younger, which I found to be a bit of a blessing as my studies got progressively more difficult as time went on. I went to the same school, kindergarten through graduation, and so that was New Hampton High School. And then from there, I went to undergrad at Cornell College, which is not to be confused with Cornell University. Cornell College is a small liberal arts school in, I'd say, central/eastern Iowa. It's right in between Cedar Rapids and Iowa City, so it's a great location in Mount Vernon. It's a little bit different. The school only teaches one class for 3.5 weeks, and then you get 4 days off and you start a new class. So you end up taking 9 classes in a year, but you just take only one a month. So I think only 2 schools in the country actually do this successfully. And so that was one of the big draws for Cornell for me because it was so different. And then from Cornell, I went on to go to graduate school in Washington, D.C. at George Washington University. I studied art history and got my master's. And from there, I got an internship at the Smithsonian American Art Museum, and I interned there for a semester. The building was actually closed for renovations, and I was lucky enough to be interning right before they were getting ready to reopen. And so I was hired on part-time to work in what was called the Luce Foundation Center. So it was actually an on-site position because most museum people work in an office building kind of off the scenes. And so I was there interacting with the public daily. And so I was doing that as well as teaching undergraduate art history courses at the Art Institute of Washington. And then almost a year ago, last November, I was hired on by the museum's public programs department to work full-time as a public programs assistant, and I still teach at the Art Institute every so often when I have time for it. I actually just finished up my summer class, and I'm taking the fall off, and we'll probably teach again in January. And so we've kind of fell into the Smithsonian, liked it, decided to stay there, fell in love with D.C., and also decided to stay here. So that's kind of from Iowa to D.C., that's how Katie got where she is.
Well, that left a lot of wonderful places I can go back and ask some more questions.
I thought I'd leave it open for you.
Well, that was so kind of you. there are a lot of not only young people, but particularly young people who often look at their own experience or where they live and limit their choices to just what they experience. And I'm going to guess that growing up in New Hampton, Iowa, you didn't have a lot of experience with art history and art museums. How did you get from being a young woman growing up in the Midwest of the United States to following that passion, that dream of, I've known you since you were a young teenage girl, mm-hmm. and how did you take that passion, that interest in art, and go from Iowa to the Smithsonian?
I was always interested in art. I was big into coloring and doodling as a kid, and my big brother loved to draw, and he is a very talented artist, and so, of course, as any good little sister, I wanted to participate in the arts as well. although my gift as far as visual arts tended to be towards ceramics as opposed to actual pencil or paper, paint and canvas. And so that definitely got me involved in studio art classes. I took art classes whenever I had an opportunity. When I was in high school, I was fortunate enough that my studio art teacher, he incorporated into every class miniature little art history lessons. They were never very long or super elaborate, but he would always test the class on them. And most people hated that portion of art class, because people thought they were going to the art classes to get out of that. but I actually really enjoyed the slides and seeing the images of other artists' work and hearing the stories behind them and what influenced them and using what they did to help me better myself as an artist. And so that started to intrigue me. The summer after my sophomore year of high school, I was fortunate enough to go with my Spanish class to Mexico. And while I was there, this I kind of credit as one of my kind of pivotal moments as far as finding my love in art history goes. We went to the National Palace in Mexico City, and we saw the murals of Diego Rivera. And they were just amazing. He was painting in a true fresco style, which is very complicated. You put wet plaster down onto a wall and you paint and put the pigment onto the plaster while it's still wet, so it kind of adheres into that plaster more securely, and so your colors stay longer and are vivid longer, which is really talented. And if you've ever seen Diego Rivera, a photo of him, he's a very large man, but he moves so nimbly on the scaffolding and things because these walls were gigantic and these pictures were just filled and filled with people. And you'd see all these quirky little things within these murals. And our tour guide, his name was Jim, I just stood by his side the entire time we were in the National Palace. And he detailed a few of the murals for me and pointed out, you know, who all these important people were, who Rivera was depicting, and what movements and his ideals. And he was telling all these stories just from these paintings. And I'm just like, wow, this is fascinating. I want to be able to do that. I think that's kind of how I fell in love with the whole idea of art history. But it was always kind of a second thought or in the back of my mind. I knew I liked it, but there were a lot of other things I liked. I think as a junior in high school, I told my mom that I was going to go to MIT and I was going to be a computer engineer. So this is my current path is a far cry from junior year in high school. And so when I started looking at colleges, I wanted to stay in Iowa. I didn't even apply to any schools out of state because I didn't think I was ready for that big of a leap yet. But I also was looking at schools that I knew no one else in my high school was going to apply to. I wanted to do something different. I wanted a clean, fresh slate. And then my next biggest thing is I wanted them to have an art history program. They didn't have to have a major, but they needed to offer art history classes, at least a minor. There needed to be a strong art program. And Cornell offered that for me. And so that's kind of how I fell into that. And then my professor at Cornell, who I'm still close to this day, she taught with such energy and just brought the classes to life in a way that I've never experienced or have even been able to duplicate in my own teaching. But she just sucked me in, and I realized that, you know, I was taking class after class that, you know, I should really major in art history because I had enough credits under my belt. And then the question was just, what do you do with a BA in art history? And so my best friend was applying to law schools, and I'm like, well, I'll apply to grad schools in art history in the same cities, and hopefully we can end up in the same spot. And he ended up in Boston, and I ended up in D.C., which is about 8 hours apart, so we're not really as close as we wanted to be. But we're still very close, and at GW, kind of things just started rolling from there. I got a lot more intense things. Kind of a interesting path, but it makes sense in my head.
Well, and it's a wonderful story about really listening to your passion, what brings you joy, what gets you excited, and listening to you talk about your, excuse me, your instructor, your professor at Cornell, who you described as sucking you in, her energy, and she obviously loved what she did because that is so contagious that it does draw people in, that when we're around people who are excited, who are doing what they love, who are, we describe it as like breathing to them because it's just part of who they are, it's very energizing to do those things that you love. And, you know, and to ask you, to think about, Katie, could you imagine your life without art?
No, I think that would be next to impossible.
Well, and that leads me to a couple other questions in terms of your path. That International Passion Day I mentioned several times at Blog Talk, and that's September 30th, and it's a day with a goal of having 5 million people take one action towards living their passions in service to others. And you are already following at least one of the passions in your life, which is your passion for art. Can you think of some challenges that you faced as you've been on that journey from that decision-making part of high school where you have to try to think about what do I want to be when I grow up to your current job as a public programs assistant at the Smithsonian? What challenges were there that almost derailed you or redirected you?
Well, there are a number of challenges. First of all, financial challenges were always there. We never had a lot of money, and definitely didn't have any money in excess when I was growing up. We had what we needed to get through, so I always knew that my education, the cost of my education would fall on my shoulders. And I think that's just something that I accepted early on. I applied for scholarships and financial aid, and I was lucky to have done well in high school and to have been fairly involved. And so that helped me a lot when I was starting school. But as anyone in that position knows, a small private school in Iowa is, or a small private school anywhere, is going to have a pretty hefty price tag. And so that was one hurdle I had to get over, was one sticker shock. As well as my parents questioned at first, you know, why Cornell? You know, you could easily go to Iowa State, the University of Iowa, UNI, and those are all fantastic schools, and I have a number of good friends who have gone there and have been very successful. But for me personally, I really needed to be something more than a number, and I wanted to be on a smaller, more intimate campus. And I do think Cornell was the perfect choice for me. I guess another hurdle was just the decision of art history in the first place. It's not a major, especially in Iowa, that you hear a lot of people talking about. Iowa doesn't have any major art museums. They're in Des Moines, the Art Center there, and the Cedar Rapids Museum of Art, the University of Iowa's Art Museum. And there's a couple others, are all great institutions, but they're fairly small. It's not something that, you know, like the Metropolitan in New York or MoMA or even, you know, the Art Institute in Chicago or the Walker Art Center in Minneapolis. They're not huge draws. It's not something you hear about as far as people making money. And my parents were always very much pushing me towards careers that would be profitable, something that, you know, they didn't necessarily always have, and so they wanted that for me. So convincing my parents that I could earn money with an art history degree was challenging. Convincing myself that I could earn a living with an art history degree was also challenging. And then grad school, I realized that, you know, once I had my bachelor's, which was great, and I could have gotten a job. I don't think it would have been a job doing what I wanted, though, because Cornell offered me a great liberal arts degree, whether or not it was an art history-related field. I could have gotten a really a good quality job, probably, you know, and stayed in the Midwest, but I decided grad school was the path that I should take so that I could really get into the museum field. You know, I just kept on remembering and thinking about all the things that I had learned and all the scholars I had read about. And for a while, I thought maybe, you know, I wanted to be a professor myself, and the only way to do that was to have more education. So I applied to a bunch of grad schools. And as far as academics go, things usually came pretty easy to me as far as tests and class and things, and so I never really worried a lot about studying. And I didn't suffer a lot of rejection as far as schools and things like that went when I applied to undergrad. However, applying to small graduate programs is very different. A lot of times schools only let maybe 6 to 15 people in a program because when you're doing graduate studies, it's a lot more intense and a lot more intimate interactions between the students and the professors. And so they really have to align their interests. And I got rejected from a number of schools, which really, it scared me. It was a feeling I had not felt before. And so that was a huge hurdle. My acceptance letter to GW actually came on my birthday, my senior year of undergrad. And I thought that was quite possibly the best birthday present I could ever receive. And then just the hurdle of relocating, because DC is so far away from Iowa. I think it's almost 1,000 miles. I've done the drive a couple of times, and it's absolutely horrendous. And my experience on planes had been very limited at that point in time, as well as, you know, when I was an undergrad, September 11th had happened, and so my parents were very, very nervous about me moving to D.C., being so close to the Pentagon, one of the sites of the plane crashes. And so there was a little bit of resistance there, but I regret none of it. It's somehow leaping over all of those hurdles has led me to a place where I'm very happy.
Well, and again, your story, Katie, about the different things that come into play when people are pursuing what they love, and the challenges, especially with people that we love and who love us, who have our best interests at heart, giving us advice and sort of that push in a direction different from where our heart tells us we want to go, that can be a real stressor for some people when they say, oh, mom and dad, or oh, honey, to a husband or wife, this is what I want to do. And the reaction is, are you crazy? And so to be able to maintain that relationship and still honor and be true to yourself, be true to those things that, as Chris and Janet Ant would say in the passion test, that what you love is God's purpose for you, that you or the universe or whatever higher power you believe in, but that the gifts and talents are really what we're meant to do. And when we don't honor that, that's when we have stress and illness and dissatisfaction and unhappiness. And sometimes that challenge is tough to help those well-meaning people understand that thanks for your opinion, and I still, this is what I want to do, this is what is important to me, and be able to take those steps and then maintain the relationships, as I said. And I know you have a very positive relationship with your parents.
Mm-hmm.
So communication is important through that process, because I know that also you listened to their opinion and took it into consideration, and still, I'm going to guess, came back with, and here are the reasons that I'm doing what I'm doing. And they respected that decision.
I think they had a lot of trust in me, and I think they understood that I put a lot of research and a lot of thought into things. It's definitely a trusting relationship on both sides. I don't get to see my parents as often as I'd like, and that is something that saddens me. And I do think that someday, moving back to the Midwest, probably not Iowa, probably a bigger city, Chicago, Kansas City, St. Louis, Minneapolis, you know, might be
place with an art museum.
In the cards. Yes, with a very large art museum would
yeah.
be ideal. In my future, the house with the yard and the dog, a husband and 3 kids, like those, that's all something I see and want in my future. It's just, for me, it's not in my immediate future. So I'm content in making professional Katie where she needs to be before I kind of step into that realm.
Well, and that's also the idea that you can have it all, maybe just not all at the same moment, that sometimes there's a sequence that works better for some of us. than others, and being patient, because you can, as I said, have it all, just maybe not right this second. And leads me to the next question, because pursuing your passion of art history has gotten you to where you do, or where you are. And before I just lost my train of thought because I went to my questions and I looked at the clock and time flies. It's been 25 minutes. Do you believe that?
Wow.
Yeah, exactly.
I talk a lot.
And it's interesting because when I invite people to be guests on the show, the first response is often either, I don't know what I talked about, or I can't talk that long. And it's surprising how fast time flies when we start sharing stories. And I think one of the questions before we go that I want to revisit, if I don't right now, is that what is it that a public programs assistant does at a museum, if that's something that maybe some of our listeners will. I never knew there was such a thing.
Well, what does a public programs assistant do? I think a better question would be, what don't I do? On my performance evaluation, there's a little section that says duties as assigned. And I have a colleague. We both are public programs assistants. We have almost the exact same job. And we laugh all the time because we're just like, oh, this is another one of those duties as assigned. So it's definitely the type of position where you have to roll with it. You have to be prepared for just about anything. But I can roll through a pretty typical day. I'll tell you what I did today. I got into work, and the first thing I do is I'm in charge of our public programs phone line. So I go ahead and I check and see if there's any messages and if there's anyone that I have to get back to. And there was a couple of people who had called when we weren't in the office, and so I made notes to get back to them. Someone called me on that line about 15 minutes into the day, and so I answered a bunch of questions for her about our programs. Then I check my email. I spend a lot of time on email just because it's constant communication between different departments, people I'm contracting with, people who are actually over in the museum versus people in our office building. I line up things for purchase orders because we're federally funded and a federal institution. We have to be very specific on the way that we spend our money, and there's a lot of forms involved and a lot of red tape and specific processes and things like that. So I did a little budgeting, which isn't the most desirable part of my job, but everybody has the paperwork they have to deal with. I did a little brainstorming with my colleagues about future. I'm sorry?
Nope, didn't say anything.
Okay, I'm sorry. I did some brainstorming with a future colleague, or with a colleague, about some future programs and things like that. We are always one season ahead, and so our fall just started. So right now we're working on winter programs, and so I was working on two specific programs. I have a lecturer I'm trying to bring in, and the dates that we have available don't work for her. So I'm trying to figure out a way to mesh schedules. And she's an artist. She does glass and ceramics, and she works in New York. And so she's pretty busy, and so it's a little difficult to get a hold of her. And also I'm working on another program, which is a family type of programming. A woman just recently wrote a children's book about part of our collection, and she would like to do a reading and a book signing. And I kind of want to jazz up the program a little bit, so I'm like, well, why don't you come and do that as one component? It's about some portraits that we have of Native Americans, and so I'm like, maybe I could have some Native American dancers come in. There's a couple of groups who perform at the National Museum of the American Indian who are very respectful to the traditional ways. I'm like, it'd be great to have, you know, a dance performance. So I'm trying to contract with them and see if they can work within our limited budget. And then try to come up with some craft activities and things for kids to do. So it's kind of a whole afternoon of fun things. And then I spend a lot of time meeting with different people and coordinating to make sure that our programs go smoothly, that all the forms are set up. We have to contact people with security, people with facilities, and make sure that anyone who might be involved in the space that our program is happening in is aware of what's going on. So a lot of forums and a lot of connecting with people. And then I also do a lot of in-house design for our advertising. So if we have signs that go up in the lobbies advertising a talk, or maybe if we have a small run of postcards or brochures, I might have a hand in developing those. Today I made a sign for a gallery talk that we had by one of our curators. That was at 5:30 today, Eastern time. I made that sign. I went and put it up, came back and did some paperwork, and then I went back and met the curator giving the gallery talk, and so I staffed that. I introduced her to the group of people that came to hear her, and I stayed with her during the talk to make sure she was okay if she needed anything, and then afterwards we talked about how it went. And so then I probably left the museum around 7 o'clock, came home, and called you, Melanie. So it's usually a very, very busy day.
Yes, and it sounds like you have some variety in what you do, too. And you're right that we all have parts of our jobs that we don't like so much that still have to do.
Definitely. There's quite a bit that I do, and it's never the same day to day, and sometimes you never know what's going to come up. And it's a lot of nights and weekends, so it's definitely a good job for someone young and full of energy without family commitments right now is really great, because, I mean, I don't have a husband and kids that I need to worry about. It's just me, so I don't need to worry about any making sure I'm anywhere at any specific time when I get off work or on the weekends. So I do work a lot of odd hours.
And that is something that is important to know. Now, I am going to guess that Tom may be back downstairs, so I'm going to throw that phone number out in case anyone is listening and wants to call with some questions. Otherwise, I can ask Katie more questions. But if you would like to call her, you can call in at 347-215-8390. And if Tom's at the switchboard, he can pop open the mic. He just needs to let us know that there's someone with a question. So unless we hear anybody, Miss Katie, we can continue to move forward. And there was a question that I had for you, going back to your high school experiences, thinking about those, not only the young people who are listening, but other people in the state of our economy who are looking either to go back to school, to pursue maybe a dream that they had when they were young and they turned away from for a variety of reasons. What lessons or ideas or strategies would you share based on your experience that you think might be helpful to someone else?
I think I would have to say, I guess don't let the unknown scare you away from things. Kind of that idea of, you come to a fork in the road and you can take the easy path or you can take, which is, you know, visibly the hard road. It may look like it's scary, but once you get going, you figure out what you're doing, it's probably going to run a lot more smoothly than you realize. And when you get to the end of it, feel like it's much more satisfying than the easy road ever is. I think about it a lot of times, you know, if I had done the easy route, where I would be, if I went to the more affordable school, if I stayed in Iowa and didn't go to grad school, if I didn't try for my internship at the Smithsonian, because it was a little bit more rigorous, if I didn't, you know, persist and pursue in different opportunities. For a while I was, juggling two part-time jobs. It was pretty stressful, but things worked out really well in the end with where I'm sitting right now, with my jobs and things. And I don't know, I could have let the thought of moving to a huge city, all by myself scare me away, but instead I sucked it up, and I think it was one of the best decisions I ever made.
And when I was listening to you talk about that, a quote came to mind, and it was that the quote about when people get to the end of their life, it's not what they did that causes the most regrets, it's what they didn't do.
Mm-hmm.
That taking the easy road, or sometimes it seems like we're taking the tougher road by staying where we are because it's comfortable, it's predictable, even though we don't like it. And that's why it seems tougher, because mm-hmm. we'd be so much happier if only or when I. And sometimes, yeah, it may mean that there are some changes financially, that there are some, that you have to go back to school, maybe taking out some loans. And as a friend of mine shared with me, Melanie, one day you're going to wake up and realize that life is not a dress rehearsal. It's live, and you only get to play it forward. You don't get to rewind and all that good stuff. So thinking in that perspective of making the choices day to day that are moving you towards what you want and that do bring you joy and that you use your talents and your gifts. And thinking about that, Katie, because you are where you are now, what's out there for you, oh, who knows, 5, 10 years down the road? What are you thinking about that's also a passion for you? You said that you do want to have a family and own a home. What else is part of that? What do I want to do when I grow up idea?
it's tricky. Some days I definitely live just the day to the day, trying to kind of make my way through. But I have a lot of goals for myself. Professionally, I look at what my boss does, and I'm like, you know what? I may not have the experience right now, but in a couple of years, you know, I think I could do her job, and I think I could do it well. I want to continue professionally going up and gaining more experience, gaining more recognition, and gaining more responsibility. Sky's the limit as far as that goes. I think someday I do want to come back to the Midwest, and I think that is in my future. I haven't really considered it seriously yet, because I think if I were to move, it would probably be once I found someone that I do want to kind of share my life with, which that person hasn't come along yet, so I'm still keeping, I guess, my eyes open in that respect, but it's not something that I'm focusing on. I also want to get a chance. Right now I've been very busy as far as work goes, doing a lot of the museum and a lot of teaching. I'd like to get to a point where I'm able to focus a little bit more on some leisure activities as well. I'm big into making things, having creative projects, whether I'm cooking or baking, knitting, making jewelry, things like that. Just little things make me very happy to kind of bring out my creative side. And so I want to explore with that some more, learn some new techniques. I also want to travel. It's a big thing for me. And part of it's professionally and part of it's just personally. I really want... You know, I haven't been to Italy or France or Spain. I haven't seen any of the big museums and fantastic places I've read about. I have, as I said before, gone to Mexico. I've been to London. I've been to Greece. And I'm hoping that is the beginning of a very long list of international travel. But it's going to take time, and I think some budgeting and things like that. And so I think I could easily say, well, you know, I'm content doing what I'm doing right now, but I think I just need to kind of persevere and figure out a way to make these things happen.
Mm-hmm. Well, and having those dreams and those goals and being open to what shows up, because who knows, somebody might pay you to do tours of art museums across Europe. Wow, wouldn't that be awesome?
That would be fabulous. Absolutely fabulous.
Well, let's just put that out there, Katie, so you never know who's listening. So So, yeah, you can reach Katie through me if you send an email to brainbonanza@gmail.com. If you're interested in hiring someone, Katie may be willing to talk with you. Katie, we only have 5 minutes left.
Oh, wow.
I know, in our time together. And in closing, in this last few minutes, what if you only had one or two things to share with listeners that you think could make a positive difference in their life? You've already shared one, and that's, you know, to accept the challenge of the what appears to be more difficult road rather than succumbing to fear. Is there anything else that you would share?
Well, I think one thing I learned very early on is just like you should never judge a good book by their cover, you should never judge a person by their outward appearance. And especially during college and then living in D.C., you meet so many different types of people and a lot of people who are going to be very different from yourself, but you never know when that person is going to present an opportunity to you. Or if that person might share a similar interest or passion with you that you might not have guessed before. And so it's having that open mind, I think, is extremely important. And I've made some amazing friends and wonderful connections along my way that I don't think I would have been able to do had I been closed-minded in that respect.
That's another good kernel of wisdom. And I'm going to guess that at some point there will be a number of Upward Bound students who may listen to this interview, because I'll be sending an email back to the director of the Luther Upward Bound program, and as well as others, because the people who I interview, when they share their stories, can be very inspiring, especially to young people who think that I can't do what I love to do. And so they may also want to get in contact with you if they have a similar question or an interest to how can I pursue what it is I want to do. So we'll invite them to do that. And in our last couple minutes, Katie, anything in closing that as far as your experience doing this interview, you survived.
I did survive.
And you shared some very powerful ideas. And I think sometimes, depending on the person and depending on the perspective, that it may click with people. Something that you shared may spark someone else to say, hey, maybe I can do that because she did that. And maybe I can look at the private college, because like you, I wanted to be more than a number. So I went to a private school as well and smiled every time I paid a loan check for 10 years because I paid for that wonderful experience. And it's accepting, I think, that we can do those things. It's just choices that we make. And we can find support along the way. And I know you had not only the support of your parents, your friends. There were a number of people throughout your path that you were able to ask for help or support or who offered it to you, right?
Yes, definitely.
There we go. So there are wonderful people out there, and people like you, Katie, who are willing to share your experience to help other people. I appreciate it, and I know that a number of my listeners do as well. Thank you so much for being here, Katie, and for doing what you do to share your passion for art. Because you may not think that you have the same energy and enthusiasm as your professor, and it may look and sound different, but what you do in your interaction, whether it's the programs you put together, the children you work with, those experiences may be the spark for them that get them to move on their path of appreciating, exploring a career in art. So thank you for what you do.
Well, thank you for letting me share what I do with you and your audience, Melanie.
Have a good night, Katie. And to all my listeners, thank you for being here, and I look forward to having you back. So stay tuned to see who will be with us in the future. And until next time, take an action on something that you've heard tonight, celebrate International Passion Day on September 30th. And to learn more, you can visit brainbonanza.com. For more information, will be posted in the next 48 hours or so. Have a great week, and until next time, live your passions, follow your dreams, and stay safe.
Hey, Mel, can you hear me?
Yes, did you push the button?
Hey, Mom.
Because it's still recording. If you didn't push the sounder button, then we need to disconnect.
Thank you for listening to Spark Radio with Miss Melanie. Please share this show link with those you believe would enjoy and benefit from listening. We invite you to join us for upcoming shows with special guests and more sparks. May a spark you heard ignite a positive change in your life. Good day.
Listen.